Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews, and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
You are listening to Zed Games, Australia's most beloved and longest-running, probably, gaming radio program. I didn't look that up, but it's probably true, right?
Probably.
Excellent. That's fine. I am Lee, and joining me in the studio for this episode, Razor, as
Hello.
Ever. We can't run without him. He's the only one who knows how to run this machine. Miss Candy Payne.
Hi.
Our special guest host guy, Slato.
Hello.
There he is. And we're going to have Tim Scheel in later on. He's in here right now, but he's not talking yet, right?
Yep.
Okay. What's happening on the show?
Well, Tim has a collaboration with the Queensland Symphony Orchestra happening this Friday night at the State Library, so naturally we'll be talking to him all about that. Sounds like a very interesting show. And later on in the program, Lee, you have been playing Wolfenstein The Old Blood, so you'll be talking about that for us.
Yeah. That's all I got.
But let's get this episode started with the Week in Gaming News headlines with the lovely Miss Candy Payne.
Oh, the lovely. Thanks, Razor. Ubisoft has officially announced details about the next Assassin's Creed game. Subtitled Syndicate, the setting will be London in 1868, during the peak of the Industrial Revolution. The game will once again focus on the feud between the Assassins and the Templars and will star twins Jacob and Evie Fry. Assassin's Creed Syndicate is set for launch on the 23rd of October for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and a PC release is scheduled shortly after. In other Ubisoft news, Tom Clancy's The Division has been delayed until early 2016.
So we knew that was coming, but it is kind of like it looks cool.
They got rid of the multiplayer, I heard.
Yeah, that was nice.
Nothing of value was lost.
But they brought in women.
Yes.
Yeah,
so, worked out how to animate them.
I guess they sort of balanced the fact that there was a huge outcry with the last one where there was no female protagonist. And this time they've kind of worked around that by having a twin brother and sister so that they can, I guess someone in the studio there or someone in the office must think that having a female protagonist must be like throwing millions of dollars into the sea. So they've kind of got the best of both worlds there by having a twin brother and sister combo.
It does look good. I do like the top hat. That's a nice change from the hood. I mean, the hood's still there, but you get to wear a top hat. That's what I'm most excited about.
Yeah, it looks like they're definitely drawing a lot of influence from the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes films as well as...
I was going to say Jack the Ripper.
Well, that was... The era, yes, yeah. As well as like Gangs of New York. There's a lot of cool stuff in there, but then the gameplay videos, it's just Unity again, but with top hats.
We also know that this will be the first time that the Assassin's Creed series won't be on the old consoles. So there won't be any more Assassin's Creed for the Xbox 360 or the PlayStation 3 going forward from now on. Slato, do you have your next-gen console?
I've always had my next-gen console, PC.
Good answer.
I'll get one eventually.
Yeah, I'll get one in time for the release. This week's federal budget confirmed that Australians will pay GST on digitally purchased goods, including games purchased on Steam and other digital stores. Physical goods ordered online with a value of less than $1,000 will still be exempt from GST. The stricter enforcement of GST is expected to raise $350 million over 4 years and will also increase the cost of digital goods purchased through Netflix, Amazon, and Google. The so-called Netflix tax will take effect in July 1st, 2017.
Just so that we're all aware, the election that year will be early January. So please vote wisely.
Despite heavy speculation, Nintendo will not demonstrate or announce anything to do with their upcoming console, codenamed NX, at the E3 convention this year. At an investor meeting, Chief Executive Satoru Iwata said that the company will not fully reveal the console until 2016. There are very few details known about the NX, but Nintendo are calling it a new concept console and not a simple replacement for either the Wii U or 3DS.
I think it was a bit of a mistake announcing that so early.
Yeah.
I mean, what good does it do to owners of Wii U or the 3DS now? They're a bit disillusioned.
Yeah. I mean,
it feels like Nintendo's given up on them a little bit.
Yeah, it must be pretty bad if you're also like a developer wanting to work on one of those consoles. Like, maybe now you're rethinking what you're going to release on. They've just disrupted their own market.
And with the new Zelda game as well, now that's been pushed back until, 2087. we got nothing to look forward to from Nintendo, unfortunately. I mean, there's very few Wii U releases in the pipeline. It's a bit unfortunate.
Yeah, come on, guys. It's a nice console. Put some games on it.
Indeed.
Now, we are joined in studio by the man, Mr. Tim Scheel. He's a radio host. He's a multi-instrumentalist and a game soundtrack composer. Thank you very much for joining us today, Tim.
That's quite an introduction. Thank you very much. Hey, it's a pleasure to be here.
So the reason you're here is you're collaborating with the Queensland Symphony Orchestra, and that is culminating in a super show that's happening at the State Library of Queensland this Friday evening.
Wow, a super show. That's building it up a fair way.
You live up to that now.
Yeah, okay. Well, no, I was just going to put on a regular show, but, we can supersize it. Yeah, it's exciting. It's the first time I've ever performed with an orchestra. It's the first time I've ever played my own music in Brisbane as a performer, and it's the first time I've ever performed the duet soundtrack, so it's a big deal. Maybe it is a super show.
How did this come about? Were you approached by the orchestra, or was it the other way around?
I was actually approached by Ryan Walsh, who's a Brisbane-based composer and orchestral arranger, so that's sort of his day job. And he had been playing duet, this was at the end of last year, and really loved it and loved the soundtrack. And I think he was looking for a way to work with the QSO, and he knew that they had this festival coming up this year called QSO Current, where the program, like the events they're putting on this weekend, aren't the usual orchestral classical fare. They're a bit more experimental, a bit more edgy. So I think he saw an opportunity to get this up, essentially. So he pitched it to me, and I was like, that sounds, someone says, do you want to play with an orchestra? I mean, we're not going to say no. So I was like, okay, cool. And then, the QSO are into it, and it's all come about like that, which is great.
That worked out really well for you.
It's worked out okay. Well, fingers crossed. I'll get back to you after Friday. Yeah. No, I think it's gonna be pretty special, I think.
Can we back up and just talk about Duet the Game? How did you get involved with the developers of that game?
Well, actually, the first time I saw Duet was at PAX Australia in Melbourne in 2013, I guess that was. And the game hadn't been released, and they were showing a super, super early build of it. So if you've seen the game Duet, you know that's got a really minimal style. But even like this was even more minimal than that. It looked like Pong with a couple of balls. I mean, like Pong with some blocks. Yeah, and so I thought that looked interesting, but I didn't really speak to them then. But then it was a bit later, and this is almost cliched, like in gaming circles, I realize that now, but I saw a movie called Indie Game the Movie, which is a documentary about indie developers. And I was sort of new to that world. I didn't know a lot about indie gaming, but found that film really fascinating and the stories of those indie teams. But also loved the music in the film. So I looked up that composer, who turned out to be Jim Guthrie, a Canadian video game music composer. I just got wrapped up in that whole world. And I basically watched that movie one night, and I woke up the next morning and went, why am I not making music for games? Like, the music that I've put out in the past, if you go back and listen to it, it sounds like it belongs in a video game or something, but I never sort of pursued that. So I asked around my mates in Melbourne. I just figured, I must know someone that knows someone that makes games. And then, a friend of a friend got me in touch with Comobius, who were working on Duet. We went for a coffee, and, it was a great fit, so I started working with them.
The game Duet, you're kind of playing a circle, and on each end of the circle, if that makes sense, there's a red and a blue.
They're like little orbiting
orbs. Yeah. And you have to sort of navigate them through this maze of shapes or something. It's hard to describe.
It's a hellscape of shapes is what it really is.
But the game is it's very reflex driven. It's twitch reflex, and it gets frustrating, and it sort of requires timing, kind of like the old Flappy Bird game does, that sort of precision.
Yeah.
But the soundtrack is so soothing in direct contrast to that. I'm guessing that was a deliberate kind of move on your part to offset the frustrating or the occasionally frustrating nature of the game with the soothing audio?
Definitely, yeah. I think I wouldn't say I'm an aficionado of that kind of Twitch mobile gaming, but I did, even just in researching for Duet, I came across a couple of them, and it always bugged me that you were playing these really intense, difficult games that required this like real focus, but the music was often this kind of high energy blaring like 20-second loop of like da 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 da. It's like, how can I concentrate?
Everything is formulated to make you throw the controller through
screen.
Exactly, yeah.
Twitch games.
Yeah, totally.
It's so refreshing playing this kind of game. Like, if you had it without the music, I don't think I would have stuck with it at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have just lost my mind completely, because it's just, like, the gaming mechanics is just, every time you make the slightest mistake, you have to go, it just rewinds the whole level back, and you've got to start all over again.
Yeah.
And it's a mobile game, so you're like, oh, look, screw up three times, give up.
Yeah.
But there's something about it. I don't know. There's something that they've done with the music, the sound design, and the voice acting.
Yeah.
Do you know much about that?
I do. Well, I mean, I did all audio in the game, so there's only a couple of sound effects in the game because it is so simple. Like, there's a sound when you crash into one of the blocks, and then there's a sound when it backs up, it rewinds. And I guess, yeah, it was important to me to make those sounds fit in with the rest of the world, you know. So I actually used the same synthesizer. I've got this, like, hipster little synthesizer called an OP1. Any music nerds listening will be like, oh, he's got an OP1.
Yes, I've got one.
And there you go. So that's all over the Duet soundtrack, is the OP1. And yes. But I actually made the sound effects in the OP1 as well. So in that game, in Duet, you know, like you say whenever you hit a block, it kind of rewinds. In the OP1, in that synthesizer, there's like a built-in tape machine that has like its own rewind sound. So the rewind sound in Duet is literally the rewind sound in the OP1. But my point is, like, yeah, trying to make it a complete immersive audio sound world was really important. And yeah, the voice acting in the game is my friend from Melbourne, Jojo Petrina. And we get a lot of tweets and emails now about, like, you know, she actually is getting a lot of tweets direct to her account, people just finding her and just going, I love you. Like, can you a guy Facebooked me the other day and said, where online can I download just the voice samples from Duet? And I was like, I don't know, what do you want them for? And he said he wanted to put them on his as his ringtones. He wanted to have it. Jojo. Yeah.
the thing is that there is a lot to say about that voice, I think. I want to talk about ASMR, if you know much about it. Or
I don't.
auto meridian sensory response. It's a good little Google trip. A lot of people are just watching YouTube videos of women talking very closely to the mic.
I have seen that, yeah.
And it's all about triggering this kind of like tingly feeling.
Yeah.
And
like a primal, like it's a...
Yeah, like if you ever use one of those big spider things that you put on your head and makes you get shivers, like those
yeah, the massage things.
Yeah, the massage things. It's the same kind of response that people are getting by listening to these sounds, or also these YouTube stars, essentially, of just women talking into really close mic into...
Just for the record, listeners, we don't have cameras in here. Just, sorry to disappoint.
But yeah, the production on those vocals is very interesting, because you sort of hear her, like, you got that reverse delay and reverb, so you can sort of hear her start speaking before it actually starts, and there's just so much interesting sound design in that game. I'm trying to frame this in a question, but really I'm just talking about...
Well, I keep going, because it's mostly praise that's coming out somehow.
Yeah. This is fine.
Yeah, so I can
just
keep going.
Yeah, no worries.
Tim, you mentioned doing a bit of research in the lead up to this. What kind of research were you doing for it?
Well, actually, because the game has some similarities to Super Hexagon, another very popular game at the time. And so really, probably, I mean, I said I did research, but essentially I just quickly played that game and had to listen to the soundtrack. In a way, I took that as, because the developers of Duet were quite conscious that when it came out, they were going to be compared to Super Hexagon. And in a way, I was playing that game and listening to that soundtrack to know what not to do, like how to separate Duet from that. So I took a very different approach. You know, the Super Hexagon soundtrack's made by this incredible chiptune producer called Chipsell, who, you know, is an absolute star. She was in Melbourne recently for...
We love Chipsell on this show. Yeah.
Yes. Well, there you go. So, but I essentially, like, I heard that and I went, okay, well, that's... Because that's not really what I do anyway. I'm not really a chiptune-y kind of guy. I come from a different background. But that definitely made me think, no, I'm gonna stamp my own thing on Duet and kind of take it into a different place, yeah.
Yeah, because you could have easily just given tracks to the production team and they'd just play them, but you've had a really, you know, integral role in the... Like you said, you were not just in charge of making the music, you did all of the sound design and recording and, like, you did a lot of treatment on vocals and sound effects, and it just, it makes so much difference. Like, I can't imagine playing that game ever. Like, it'd have I'd have no interest in it if it didn't have this incredible sound design.
Okay. Well, thank you.
So, everybody should go and get it. It's like $3, and it's free for the first, like, thing. It's such a good game.
Slato, did Tim plant you here ahead of time?
No, he did not.
Let's get talking about the old days, if you don't mind. So,
wow. How old am I? The old days.
So I guess you've had a long musical career, and it's only recently that you've sort of gone into the territory of video game soundtrack. Have you noticed that the fan base has changed over that time? Like, are you getting different comments about your music as your audience changes?
I suppose just specifically, you know, the Duet soundtrack coming out, or the Duet, the game coming out, but then I released the soundtrack online. I've had a big response to the soundtrack, and it's mostly from gamers. It's mostly from Duet fans, whereas the albums I put out previous to that, you know, were music lovers or electronic music fans or whatever. That's been really interesting. A lot of people say that the soundtrack is great for study or for coding or any kind of those kind of...
Work today. Work. That was my all day today.
So that's kind of interesting, I suppose, like that maybe the Duet soundtrack's really used by a lot of people now outside of the game as kind of a passive listening tool, a thing that they'll put on and maybe not engage with completely, just go about their day. And so that's interesting to me, yeah.
You describe yourself, or maybe somebody has described for you, as a multi-instrumentalist. What does that actually entail? Because I see a multi-instrumentalist and I picture like Bert from Mary Poppins, you know, and his one-man band, like lots of things happening. But what does that actually mean for you?
For me, that's a code word that means I can't really play any instruments very well.
Just like Bert, then.
Just like Bert.
I can't really... It's quite difficult sometimes for me to explain what it is that I do in terms of my music-making process, because I'm a producer, first and foremost, not really an instrumentalist. So, I mean, I played a bit of guitar in high school, and I now can kind of bluff a little bit on a keyboard. But still, I'm not really great at either of those things. So, yeah, I mean, I came up with the word multi-instrumentalist when I was trying to describe to people what I was doing with Gautier when I was touring with him. And, you know, I mean, my nan was really excited that I was playing with Gautier, but I couldn't tell her that I was on stage doing electronics and Ableton and samples, and it's like eyes glaze over. So I started saying keyboardist and multi-instrumentalist. It's like, ooh,
wow,
I know what that
is.
It sounds like a guy that does lots of stuff. Well, that's about right, yeah.
If I play power chords on the guitar, like three of them, and then played the root note on the bass and tap my foot at the same time, am I a multi-instrumentalist or is there a minimum number of instruments that you have to be?
Multi is two, right?
Awesome. Unless,
what would you be, a dual instrumentalist, maybe?
I think I'll put that on my bio.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, looking forward to this Friday show at the State Library. Is there a visual component to go along with it, as it's a game soundtrack?
There is, yeah. So musically, it's me performing, doing electronics and stuff with a 20-piece ensemble, which is pretty exciting. But the visuals are being put together by a Brisbane guy called Jameis Loveday, who's actually part of 7-Bit Hero, the video game music band thing entity, which I'm sure you guys know all about. He's come on board and he's kind of adapting the visual aesthetic of Duet for the live environment. And he was showing me he's kind of working on it right now as we speak, actually. He's at home beavering away, rendering. It looks incredible. He's taken what is a really minimal game, minimal visuals, and turned it into something kind of vaguely psychedelic. So, yeah, it should be a full...
So we're not just sitting there watching the game?
No. Although, you know, I mean, I don't want to talk about what I would have liked to have done with this show, because it's, you know, the show is still going to be great. But at one point we were tossing up trying to figure out how to do like a live version of Duet that was playable by the audience. And so I think we almost got there, but we couldn't quite get it together. So we all a little bit have our fingers crossed that this won't be the last time that we do it, that we might get to do this show again. And when we do, there might be a playable build of Duet. So you bring your phone to the show and you can listen to us while you play on
screen. Oddly enough, that's not where my brain went. When you said getting the audience involved, I was picturing people being like halved into blue and red teams and like running around white blocks in the middle of the room. Just my brain
I was actually picturing, you know how people upload perfect YouTube runs of video games? I reckon, just a perfect run of duet. Yeah. Flawless victory.
Flawless victory. Yeah.
I was trying to figure out what you would actually do, though, if the audience is, like, bad at duet, and then suddenly it rewinds, do all the orchestra people have to suddenly, like, back up to where they were, and then off you go again.
And start again. So if everyone in the audience just sucks, then you only ever hear, like, the first few minutes of the soundtrack. It never moves on. Yeah, maybe.
Well, that's the beauty of the duet soundtrack, is that it is continuous despite your failings, and I think that's a key way that your frustration is kind of alleviated.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're playing, are you performing live? Is that the thing, like, this Friday night?
Yes, so it's me with 20 members of the QSO, so I'll sort of be surrounded by different electronic instruments. I've brought the OP1 synthesizer I was talking about before. I'm also playing, like, my other primary instrument for this gig is the iPad, which is definitely, there are a few raised eyebrows in rehearsals this week when the orchestra guys filed in.
Are you actually just playing the game and it's plugged into, like, an amp, and then that's, like, that's your part?
I actually had to make sure that I'd moved the duet icon, like, away, because it actually looks a lot like the icons for the music apps that I'm using for this show.
Right.
So I wouldn't want to accidentally open the duet app. But, no, I've got a couple of really interesting music performance apps on my phone, which I'm looking forward to.
Have you explained these to your grandmother?
They're actually a bit easier to explain in person, because they're really visual kind of apps. You can, it just sort of makes a lot of sense.
But Grandma, no, I'm playing the iPad with the symphony orchestra.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You know those orchestral seating charts where it's like, oh, the bassoons go here, and like, there's no iPad on that chart.
Oh, there should be. Just iPad off in the corner. Yeah. What was the first experience with the orchestra? You've just met them all this week?
Yeah, I flew up from Melbourne yesterday and we had our first rehearsal. And it was great. It was definitely intimidating for me. I've never worked in that environment before, but they were really, really open and really receptive, and it's sounding great already, and we've got one more rehearsal tomorrow, and it's going to come together pretty quickly. I mean, the interesting thing about orchestras, I guess, if you're a bit naive about it, which I guess I was, you know, they're professional musicians. Their day job is to come in and read the notes off the page. So it's not a challenge for them at all to come in, and the duet score is all printed out, and they sort of nailed it on the first go. So the rehearsal's essentially for my benefit, not really there.
Just making sure you open the right iPad app.
Yep.
Tim, it has been an absolute pleasure having you in the studio. Thank you very much for joining us. So you're playing this Friday night at the State Library of Queensland in the Edge Complex.
Yep.
You can get tickets via the QSO website, is that right?
Yeah, qso.com.au.
And the duet soundtrack is also available for free on Bandcamp.
It is, and also there you can also find two other duet releases that have come out since. I put out a remix record of a whole bunch of my friends in Melbourne remixing tracks from the duet soundtrack, and also there was an update to duet earlier this year with 5 new tracks that I've put up as an EP as well.
Awesome. Thank you very much again, Tim, for joining us today.
Meanwhile, Lee, you've actually been playing a game this week, Wolfenstein.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, good or bad, get into it.
Well, look, it's a standalone expansion thing for last year's release, Wolfenstein the New Order. This is Wolfenstein the Old Blood. Wolfenstein the New Order was kind of surprisingly great. We weren't really expecting a new Wolfenstein to be able to deliver, but what it was it harkened back to the fun, chunky shooting gameplay of the classic FPS before you got everything turned into a Modern Warfare clone. But then it also, for no reason, like, it didn't need to, it was, like, poignantly written and quite sharp and clever. So it was just this weird thing where part of it you were, like, hiding in revolutionary France, interacting with these sad, like, underground figures, and trying to improve their lives. And the other half was you putting a knife in a robot Nazi dog's neck. So, you know, maybe a bit of whiplash there. but it was a fantastic game. This has come out now. It is at a reduced price. It's about 6 hours or so worth of content, and it's not as good.
Mm.
Yeah, that's the sound I made.
Mm.
So it's a prequel. The other one was set in an alternate 1960s where the Nazis used weirdo technology to conquer the world.
Yep.
And won.
And won. Well, yes. This is a prequel set in 1946. So you are again playing as B.J. Blauskowitz. You are infiltrating Castle Wolfenstein, but a different Castle Wolfenstein. It's a popular name, I think. And eventually, about 6 hours in, they add the twist, which is that there are also zombies in this one.
What?
Oh.
Well, there were zombies in the old, old games.
Well, there were in the middle old games. There's been a lot of Wolfenstein
there
games.
Has.
Yeah. So this one wants to reinsert the classic Wolfenstein experience and then also allow for a smoother transition from that through to the weird middle period games that Raven Software made and then those other guys that were in the offshoot of id Software and then reconnect it back in with last year's actually good one. And I don't think they quite made it. I think their intention with it was that the first half of this was going to be a modern reimagining of original Wolfenstein 3D. Back on your 386 IBM compatible, before you had Doom, you were wowed by Wolfenstein 3D. So you are going through a castle or caves or a fortress or the upstairs bit of a fortress where you can go around the outside of it.
And do you do a lot of mashing of the spacebar at brick walls looking for movable secrets?
you do the equivalent of that. Yeah. You definitely are like knocking down walls and like finding hidden piles of gold. The other game was full of like lots of hidden rooms and stuff that told the story. This has hidden rooms that have little piles of gold in it that you collect, which I like that that's, you know, like
Nazi gold.
Yeah,
yes.
Nazi gold is good, but also not quite as good as what we had last time around, is it? You know, it's all the stuff from the other one, except without all that the other bits that elevated it.
Yes.
So it was a good first-person shooter back then. It's, you know, like, it's chunky and gory, and it, you know, you get to choose between a stealthy approach until that falls to crap and then you have to shoot everything, or just going and shooting everything. But it feels less like you're occupying real spaces and progressing with a narrative in this one. It feels more like you are in a series of pseudo puzzle rooms and tunnels where you have to shoot Nazis who are walking around. And it's disappointing because you can see that mechanically it's still the same. It's just that all of the craft of the previous game has been lost. Maybe they didn't have the time for it. It was, you know, this was clearly going to be a much smaller production that they then pumped a bit more money into to expand it into something else. I think the real disappointment for me, though, is that you get the feeling that they wanted to do this cool stealth, like, zombie Nazi thing and then couldn't quite figure out how to, like,
do stealth.
How to connect it. Their stealth stuff was okay in the previous one, provided you had a big enough space. But here their level design doesn't really allow it to be as interesting and dynamic. The fact that the thing that separates this from the previous one comes so late in the game. I think there are going to be people who will play this and get frustrated and never realize that there's a weird supernatural twist.
Mm.
Which, no, put that up the front. You know?
Yes.
don't bury the lead by 6 hours. I was surprised that it took so long for the thing that this is, you know, supposed to set it apart, like, for that to ever
show
raise
itself.
Its head. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Does it work as a prequel, though? Like, if it had been released before the New Order, do you think it would have worked better?
Yeah, maybe. I think we would have been even more surprised by the New Order. You know, like, it's... bits of it are good, you know? Like, the gunplay is still fun. The enemies are fun enough and clever enough and also dumb enough to make for interesting encounters. There's nowhere near enough of them, and the environments are... they all are very, very samey. There's some cool arenas at certain points, so that stuff's all really good. And what it does really well, and what the previous one does really well, is that it makes you feel present in the space. all of the animations for your, you know, even transitioning between levels involve a lot of like first person hand doing stuff in the world, which is really, really important, I think, for giving you a sense of your character. And even the fact that you are like the lunk-headed guy from the original Wolfenstein game, and they have somehow given him, he's got this like kind of southern fried, like raspy accent. He's a really interesting character to inhabit. And he spoke a lot more in the previous game, and every time he does, he's really interesting. And he goes, it takes too long for his character to come out again in this game. So again, yeah, the pacing of that seems really, really off. Like they've just bloated this early section.
It does sound a bit like they've gone, Inglourious Basterds.
Well, yeah, the Inglourious Basterds influence was absolutely there in the first one. And yeah, they're doing a similar thing here. There's lots of bits where you're getting, like, you have at least twice an encounter with a Nazi where you're pretending to be a German, and they're being slow and introspective and talking about their feelings about pop culture and what have you, and you have to be there and just be like, yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of that stuff, a lot of like American soldiers like nervously pulling at their collar, pretending to be Nazis in front of like Nazi captains. But again, that's just rehashing what they've already done. One thing that this does really well, though, which is going to sound incredibly dumb, but it has the best pipe weapon of any first-person game ever. Because
Is this a pipe weapon or a half-pipe
weapon? It's a pipe, right?
Okay.
So this is your melee weapon that you've got.
So it's not sawn off.
No. It's broken off. You're climbing up pipes trying to escape from a prison, and it snaps off. And it snaps off in a way where you've got this like perfect crowbar, which you use to jimmy open everything in the game. Like anytime there's a grate, anytime there's a door, you're just there jimmying them open with your pipe. But then, okay, the pipe transforms from pipe weapon. He unscrews it in the middle, right? So then he's got the one like clubby bit and the other bit with the spike on it. And so now he's got like dual wielding spiky weapons for stealth attacks. And then he can climb up walls with it. Using it like
climbing, ice picks.
Yeah, like climbing claws. So he's like going up the side of a wall with this thing.
I think the game's sold to me now.
Yeah, it's like the climbing is actually so good, because I was playing it on the PlayStation 4 and you have to like jam the triggers in like each time you like stick it into the wall and then release and jam it back in. Like that's the kind of thing that I love. I love that where the physical action you're doing really does respond well to what's happening in-game. Like, that's great. More double pipe-fisted climbing.
Can you put the pipe back together?
Yeah, then he screws it back together and then uses it as a club again. Or a crowbar. Oh. Yeah.
Does it make you just not want to look for any other weapons, and if you've got that?
Yeah, I like the other guns are all cool, you know. There's like,
but why use them when you've got like the world's best plumbing pipe?
Probably because like 800 Nazis are shooting at you at once. Like,
so it doesn't transform into some kind of amazing shield.
No, disappointing. Unfortunately, yeah, it's a real shame. Like if you could shoot something out of the end of it, it would be the perfect weapon for a first person shooter. But it's close. It's pretty close. So look, Wolfenstein: The Old Blood. It is quite cheap. I believe it's $20 in the US. We're getting it for $40 here, I think. If you can get it for around that price or less, and you are still interested in more Wolfenstein, if you were like, there are still Nazis that exist that I have to shoot or club, then maybe check this out. Otherwise, yeah, look, it's a great pipe. But I don't know if it's worth purchasing an entire game just to experience it.
Ali, thank you very much for that review of Wolfenstein: The Old Blood. Now, you played that on the PS4, but it is also available on the Xbox One and PC?
That's right, yes.
Excellent. And that's going to bring us to the end of this week's edition of Zed Games. Thank you very much for your company tonight. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much to Slato for joining us as a special guest host.
My pleasure.
And thank you to the miracle of FM broadcasting for allowing our show to exist. We're going to leave you now with a track from you, Slato. Now, this isn't the song that you chose because you arrived too late.
Yeah.
Get here earlier next time, my man. But here's the one we have on file. It's called Plateau Trance. And where can we get some more of your music?
S-L-A-T-O, slato.bandcamp.com. And it's free.
Cool. We'll catch you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.